From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Marty Moscoane, and this is Fresh Air. A live concert on this edition of Fresh Air featuring guitarist Sergio and Odeir Assad. Their music is a mix of the Brazilian pop they grew up with and 20th century influences like Villa-Lobos and Astor Piazzolla. The Assads are here in America this week, and today they play for us. Also, back in 1964, composer Terry Riley wrote a composition called In C, a work that earned him the name the Father of Minimalist Music. Today he tells us why he doesn't like that title and what music has been influential to him. Jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviews the new album from Jerry Allen and her piano trio, and Ken Tucker reviews Teen Steam, a new exercise video starring 15-year-old TV star Alyssa Milano. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. The Los Angeles Times called our guests a badly needed boost to classical guitar music. They're Sergio and Odeir Assad, and they'll be performing a live concert of acoustic guitar duets in just a few moments. The Assads grew up in a small town in Brazil, where during the 1960s they listened to and performed the indigenous music of Brazil, as well as English and North American pop songs. They were discovered while in their teens by a newspaper reporter who made arrangements for them to go to Rio de Janeiro to study classical guitar. The Assads have now recorded two albums on Nonesuch Records, and they're broadening the classical guitar repertoire by making a point of including the works of 20th century South American composers. Their new album, Alma Brasileira, which means Brazilian soul, is devoted exclusively to Brazilian composers, such as Hector Villa-Lobos, Egberto Gismonte, Hermeto Pascoal, and Sergio Assad. Their debut album, Sergio and Odeir Assad, features the work of Astor Piazzolla and Alberto Ginastera, among others. The Assads are now in the midst of a brief Eastern Coast tour. The Philadelphia Daily News described their performing as edge-of-the-chair playing, fun as well as compelling, and they're here to perform live for us now. Welcome to both of you. It's nice to have you here. I know you want to start with a piece by Astor Piazzolla. This is called Escolaza. Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Let me reintroduce you. My guests are Sergio and Odeir Assad, and they're from Brazil, and they're brothers. They've been playing together for many years. Sergio, I know that you both compose and arrange other people's works. I'd love to have you do a piece, perhaps, that you have arranged from someone else's work.
Okay, I think I would choose a piece by Gilberto Gismonti. I think he's one of the finest Brazilian musicians.
And this is a piece that you've kind of worked with. Was it written for guitar originally?
No, it's a piece that was written for piano. But he played this in a lot of different arrangements. And we decided to make another one.
Wonderful.
This piece was recorded by other musicians also. It's a quite known piece. It's called Frevo. Thank you.
want to talk to you a little bit about your playing, because when I hear you, it sounds like one guitar and four hands. And I know it isn't, but the closeness of the sound is really quite striking. How do you do that? How do you listen to each other?
By now, I have no idea.
Because your eyes are closed. I'm watching you, and it seems like it's almost telepathic. I mean, that.
I think the explanation for what we do is we have been playing together all our lives. I mean, we started playing together, and we kept that way for over 20 years now.
How old were you when you actually started playing?
I was 12, but we have a difference in between us two. I mean, whether he is 4 years younger. So, I mean, when I started, I wanted to start it before, when I was about 10, but my father didn't agree with that. My father is a musician himself, but he thought that the guitar was too complicated for me. So I had to prove to him that I was able to play, you know, a few chords.
How did you do that? How did you prove it to your father?
Oh, I tried several times. I remember that the first time I tried, it was his birthday. And I, you know, I played just in the first string, you know, happy birthday to you, but it didn't work.
That didn't work. So what did it take?
Well, I think I had an uncle of mine that came to visit us. You know, he knew to play a few chords. And for the first time, someone showed me how to make those chords, right? And I learned quite quickly.
What was it about the guitar that you wanted so much to play?
Because I think our house was full of musicians all the time. My father had a lot of friends coming, you know, all the time. And most of them, they were guitar players. So we had this fascination for the guitar. It was somehow, it was, I mean, a guitar is not difficult to buy.
So and,
you know, we always have a guitar hanging in the house, you know, and my father had guitars there. So it was a natural way, you know, to pick up the guitar and try to play it.
What kind of music did you grow up hearing? Was it mostly Brazilian music, or did you hear American popular music as well?
We always heard all kinds of music, but my father, he had his own favorite kind of music, which was kind of Brazilian folk music, mm-hmm. that's called choros. Right, which is kind of instrumental music, like let's say it has the same kind of feeling for jazz music that you have to improvise and so on. That is a very good base for any musician, because you don't learn harmony with the paper and pens, you know, you learn harmony playing.
And I get the feeling, and just listening to you set up this afternoon as we were getting ready for the concert, is that you play all the time. I mean, it sounds like there's always a guitar in your hand, or close by.
I think when we decided to, or we're choosing this to be our profession, you know, we try to be the most perfect possible. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but we try.
I understand, though, when you were teenagers, that a reporter coming through your town kind of discovered you. Did you feel like someone had actually discovered you? Obviously, he recognized your talents and took you to Rio for some classical training. Did it feel like at that point you were beginning to take your music seriously as well as everyone else?
Well, it's hard to explain this. We were playing with my father, right? And this particular kind of music. And after 6 months of playing this kind of music, my father, you know, were very excited about this. And he brought us to São Paulo because we were living in a small town, a small village. And we had this opportunity to play with very famous musicians there who played the same type of music. And, you know, he had these great words coming from these musicians, and he thought, you know, well, this is the way for these guys. And when this man, I mean, it was a newspaper man, when he came to this village, mm-hmm. he, you know, he saw us playing a part or something like this. He says, well, this boy should, you know, go and have lessons. He says, but what about, see, well, there is a very good teacher in Rio. I think you should go and see. My father went there and brought us to see her, and she was really fantastic. you know, what she said, the way she put it, the things. And he decided that he should move to Rio, and he did. He brought all the family. It was a very big sacrifice for him, but he did.
Well, in your music, there are all sorts of styles. There's classical. There's obviously your own Brazilian classical and kind of popular music. There's jazz. Do you feel like you're kind of setting up your own kind of individual kind of music? What do you see as the kinds of influences in what you, I suppose, both perform and compose?
Well, the thing is, when we started to have those lessons, this teacher, her name is Monina Távora, she basically decided that we shouldn't play anything but classical. I mean, we were obliged to forget everything that we played before. And we started this training on straight classical music. And we did this for several years. We studied with her for 8 years. And at the first, you know, stage, she wouldn't let us play at all. But you can't play, you just can play when you are ready for. Mm. So when she moved, when she went back to Argentina, we were wondering, what are we going to do with this? I mean, we wanted to play outside of Brazil, because in Brazil you can't find work. I mean, it's quite difficult. It's Brazil.
Yeah.
So we started traveling, and but we were afraid of playing Brazilian music or this kind of thing, because we were classical guitarists. So we did for 2-3 years. Then people started to ask if we could play this and that, and we started doing it. And we started to have this feeling that they enjoyed much more that kind of music than, you know, straight classical things. Then we started to make two different parts and play, you know, South American music and, you know, classical. That's the way it happened. And as we admire very much, you know, composers like Gismonti and Piazzolla, we are pushing them to write things, and they did.
Well, I want to hear some more of your music, but we're going to take a quick break beforehand, and we're listening to the guitar playing of Sergio and Odeir Assad. They're a classical guitar duo from Brazil, and they have two albums out on Nonsuch Records. The newest is called Ama Brasileira, which is devoted exclusively to Brazilian composers, and they'll play more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air.
Fresh Air is produced live at WHYY in Philadelphia and distributed by National Public Radio.
My guests are Sergio and Odeir Assad, and they are Brazilian guitar players, and they're here to perform for us this afternoon. Would you play something else for us? Thank you. Tell us a little bit about that particular piece of music.
This is it's a piece called Bibi, and it was written many years ago by quite known Brazilian composer. His name is Hermeto Pascoal, and many people recorded that piece too, and really like it.
How much practicing do you do a day even?
Well, when it depends on the schedule of things that we have, but we try to do the most possible, about 6, sometimes 8, sometimes 10 hours a day.
Gosh. Do you play off each other? I suppose you're always doing that, but I guess what I'm trying to understand is the chemistry between the two of you. If you're composing something, you compose obviously with your brother in mind. I mean, do you think...
Sure.
With
yes.
two guitars? I mean, that's the way you compose.
A lot of notes to give him to play.
Well, I can see that. I'd love to hear something that you composed. Maybe you could do something for us now.
Okay. We're going to play a very slow piece. It's a song. It's called Canção. Thank you.
Thank you. It's lovely. When did you compose that?
I don't remember now. Maybe 1 year ago. I don't know.
You're here on the East Coast for about a week now, just touring.
Yes.
How is it to play? I know you're playing in clubs now. How is it to play to smaller audiences?
Well, actually, we played in the Bottom Line in New York. It was our first experience, you know, playing in a jazz club. It went quite well. We like it. We enjoy it very much.
That's wonderful. Well, I regret to say that the half hour has flown by very quickly, and I thank you very much for stopping by today and performing for us.
We thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Thanks to both of you. Sergio and Odair Assad have a new album out on Nonsuch Records. It's titled Alma Brasileira, and it features the work of Brazilian composers. They've moved out of the classical music halls to perform in some jazz and rock venues on the East Coast this week. I'm Marty Moscoen, and this is Fresh Air. On our next show, our guest will be country singer Willie Nelson. I hope you can join us. And I'd love to have you kind of close out the half hour for us with another little piece of music.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Marty Moscoen with Fresh Air. Terry Riley's already left his mark on Western music. His composition In C influenced minimalist composers from Philip Glass to Steve Reich. But the music that influences Riley comes from the other side of the world. Coming up, Terry Riley talks about In C and his 20-year study of the music of India. Also, jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviews the new album from Jerry Allen and her piano trio. Kevin says that piano trios often sound like bad lounge bands, but this group is anything but that. And you've seen home exercise videos for housewives, business executives, pregnant women, even for people who watch too many videos. Now there's an exercise video aimed at teenage girls. Critic Ken Tucker has a review. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news from National Public Radio.
I'm Sharon Green. Former Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos will plead not guilty to a federal grand jury indictment returned to New York today that charges him with racketeering. Tracy Tong of member station KHPR reports.
Marcos's attorney, Richard Hybee, says the former president and Mrs. Marcos will surrender themselves and will go to court to answer charges. Hybee says the Marcoses will vigorously defend those charges against them.
We are confident that the charges against them are false and that they will be shown to be such, and we will look forward to the opportunity to defend vigorously against them in a court of law.
Hybee says in his personal opinion, Marcos is not physically fit to stand trial of this magnitude. He says the U.S. Justice Department's attempt to plea bargain was just a set of non-negotiable demands that would have required the Marcoses to plead guilty to a felony of racketeering charges and testify against others. I'm Tracy Tong in Honolulu.
The United States today welcomed a decision by the Soviet Union to let human rights activist Andrei Sakharov travel abroad. State Department spokesman Charles Redman said Sakharov will be traveling to the United States next month as a trustee of the newly formed International Foundation for the Survival and Development of Humanity. While Redman said the U.S. is pleased that Sakharov will be allowed to leave, he criticized the Soviets for refusing exit visas for others. Sakharov is a physicist who has been denied permission to leave the Soviet Union because of his knowledge of state secrets. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1975 for his human rights activities. Chilean President General Augusto Pinochet today reshuffled his cabinet, removing his hardline interior minister, who has rejected all negotiations with the civilian opposition. But Pinochet ruled out changes in the constitution. Tim Frasca reports from Santiago.
The new interior minister and cabinet chief is Carlos Cáceres, the treasurer of Pinochet's failed campaign in the presidential plebiscite. Cáceres previously served in the cabinet as economy minister, where he earned a reputation as a strict conservative on fiscal matters. But he is a virtual unknown politically. Nonetheless, Cáceres' appointment to replace hardline interior minister Sergio Fernández is something of a victory for the opposition, which seeks talks on speeding up the democratic transition. But in remarks after the swearing-in ceremony, Pinochet stated flatly that there will be no changes in the Constitution. Said Pinochet, this matter is not at issue. For National Public Radio, this is Tim Frasca in Santiago.
Israel lashed back today for the killing of seven Israeli soldiers in a suicide car bombing. Authorities report that Israeli warplanes and helicopters launched raids on guerrilla strongholds in Lebanon, killing 15 people and wounding 35. Reacting to the air raids, the Islamic Jihad group holding American hostages Terry Anderson and Thomas Sutherland said the men would be punished for Israel's retaliatory action. The threat came in a now standard typewritten statement with a color photo of Terry Anderson attached. Hurricane forecasters predict that the eye of Hurricane Joan may make landfall in Central America by tomorrow morning. Costa Rica today joined Nicaragua in declaring a state of emergency in preparation for the storm. National Hurricane Center Director Bob Sheets says there could be a considerable loss of life amid mudslides and flash flooding. Joan has already been blamed for the deaths of at least 22 people in Colombia and Venezuela and is now drifting west at about 5 miles an hour with 110 mile per hour winds. Stock prices were slightly higher today on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose more than 2 points to close the week at 2183.50. Advances narrowly led declines on volume of 179 million shares. You're listening to NPR News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. Jazz critic Kevin Whitehead has a review of Etudes, a new album featuring pianist Jerry Allen. Allen was raised in Detroit and has worked as a backup musician for Motown, recorded with saxophonist Wayne Shorter and Oliver Lake, and has made 3 albums under her own name. Allen now lives in New York, where she leads an ambitious octet, but her new album finds her in a trio setting with 2 veteran musicians, bassist Charlie Hayden and drummer Paul Motion.
Some of the best and worst jazz comes from so-called piano trios, actually composed of piano, bass, and drums. These trios have been around for a long time, but the idea was redefined by pianist Bill Evans around 1960. In his quiet music, bass and drums were placed on an almost equal footing with his own piano. His success inspired other great groups, but he also cleared the way for those cocktail trios who confuse sleepiness with sensitivity. Now, a new album by pianist Jerry Allen, bassist Charlie Hayden, and drummer Paul Motion captures the Evans Trio's balance while turning up the ensemble temperature. All 3 wrote music for the date, but its highlight is the tune Shuffle Montgomery by the late composer and pianist Herbie Nichols. Thank you. Pianist Jerry Allen's style tends to be spare and linear. She leaves lots of room for bass and drums to have their say. Here's part of her solo from Shuffle Montgomery. Charlie Hayden's plush and unhurried bass compensates for Allen's lean and propulsive piano. In one sense, piano and bass switch their usual roles. Hayden's chordal playing owes as much to folk guitar fingerpicking as it does to jazz walking bass, which is no surprise since he sang hillbilly music at tent shows while a boy in Missouri. Paul Motion was the drummer in Bill Evans' breakthrough trio back around 1960, and he sounds right at home in this group. Motion conducts the music, loosening and tightening his grip on the beat, but his drums may contribute to the design of a piece as well. Shuffle Montgomery began with solo drums. Here's how it ends. It isn't every trio that leaves a closing theme statement to the drummer. Bassist Charlie Hayden has pointed out the political implications of a music in which all instruments are created equal. Some folks say talk like that leads to musical anarchy, and it's true that each player is free to go off on tangents. But more often, that equality means all the players will get an equal chance to speak their piece and to shape how the music will sound. Nobody gets cut out of the loop.
Kevin Whitehead is a regular contributor to Downbeat and Cadence. He reviewed Etudes, Jerry Allen's new album on the Soul Note label. This is Fresh Air. Terry Riley launched something of a revolution in 1964 when he performed his orchestral piece, In C. That work became the guidepost for a generation of musicians that followed. Those musicians, including Philip Glass and Steve Reich, came to be known as minimalists. In C was partially notated but left room for improvisation within the range of C major. By the late 70s, Riley was teaching and doing more and more improvisational work when he met David Harrington, founder of the Kronos String Quartet. Harrington persuaded Riley to write for them, thus began a long association with Kronos. The new Kronos album, Winter Was Hard, includes an excerpt from a piece commissioned by Kronos called Salome Dances for Peace. I asked Terry Riley to look back on what he was trying to do when he wrote In C.
The one thing that I was most interested in was people playing music for real, and new music, modern music, music that had the spirit of the times, but that people would like and that would be fun to play. So In C for me was a way to express the complexity of our age, I mean the kind of, and yet in a way that had a different kind of spirit, that had a kind of group democratic society of musicians making music, who each one had their own voice was being shaped by their ideas as the piece moves along.
That earned you the title of the father of minimalist music. I'm not sure how happy you are with that particular title, if you like even the term minimalist music.
Uh-huh. I think that particular definition of my role in music is not totally accurate, although for NC it does apply. Because at least to the kind of parameters that NC deals with, it deals with repetition on a real intense level, and it deals with scaling down the melodic content of the music to just little patterns. So when you're only dealing with a few parameters, I think minimalism is an apt term. Mm-hmm. It doesn't give you a feeling, though, of what the emotional or the spiritual or the cosmic content of the music is. So in that way, it's not accurate.
Well, I think the feeling that you have, certainly listening to it, is a kind of trance-like state.
You know, after I wrote NC, I became interested in other ethnic musics in India and Africa and etc. Because I started noticing in them similar things. And for instance, the Vedic chanting of India, which is just taking a simple phrase, which is a small prayer or mantra, and repeating it over and over again, produces the same effect. I mean, it's that repetition that takes a person inward. And no matter what anybody says about trance, that is definitely one of the effects that happens, that you can't avoid it.
You were really influenced by a Indian vocalist, Pandit Pran Nath. What? First of all, what kind of singing, as a vocalist, what kind of singing does he do?
His music is goes back to very, very old traditions in Indian classical music. It's the Kirana style, which incorporates a lot of old styles and kind of amalgamates them into one very beautiful style. Pandit Pranath interested me because of his incredible melodic innovations and also his sense of pitch. He was the most in tune singer that I think, and is the most in tune singer that I've heard coming out of India. He keeps a different set of pitches for every raga. I mean, he has so many shades of pitches that it's hard to imagine how a person could hear such a spectrum of frequency.
A raga is a kind of a scale?
Well, a raga has a scale in it, but it's not a scale alone, because some scales can be the mothers of many ragas. A raga is more easily understood as a melodic type, as a melody, which has a certain shape. And then that shape, by retaining that melody as you improvise, you keep the mood of that raga and you keep deepening the mood and you try to go more, become more and more expressive through that mood whilst keeping that melodic structure going.
Ragas are unwritten. It's music that's handed down from master to pupil. In the music that's been handed down to you from Pandit Pranath, this is music that's yours and his together?
It's nobody's really, but the fact is that it's standing out there like between us all. I mean, it's a shape. It's something that's there. It's a tradition, and these shapes have to be understood by the student before they can be manifested by him to another student. So there's a long, long period of internship with this thing. I mean, 20 years is a very normal and minimal time to spend with. This will be coming up for me almost 20 years in 1990 that I've been with him. And I feel like still just scratching the very surface of this work because, when you get a tradition that's been going on for thousands of years and it's been built on by many geniuses and yet it's not written down, you can imagine how mind-boggling all the materials are. I mean, it's so intricate.
You've said that you're a gambler when it comes to performing. How big a gambler are you willing to be?
Well, I'm willing to fall on my face, and I often do. And I think that's, if you can't do that in a concert, for instance, there's a certain life of the concert which is not, for me, not, for instance, if I listen to a recording back and I haven't really taken chances, it's boring to me. The concert didn't really happen. And the gambling is that it's reaching that stage that's beyond yourself all the time. And I think most improvisers try for that. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes you actually can't do what you think you tried for or you heard coming. But it's the most exciting aspect of performing and improvising.
I understand that you really were first introduced to improvisation as playing ragtime in a bar in San Francisco. This, I guess, kind of predates your interest in Indian culture.
Well, it goes back even further than that. I was in a hillbilly band when I was in grammar school and played, bluegrass and stuff like that with other musicians from a little town in Northern California. So I improvised since I started playing. I was always learning tunes off the radio and stuff and by ear. That was my favorite thing to do.
Who do you listen to? What kind of music do you listen to?
Mostly Indian classical music, and mostly the recordings that I have of Pandit Pranath, because they're studies for me of a kind of work that I'm deeply interested in. But I occasionally will hear things that other, like when I'm on tour, I hear a lot of music that I wouldn't ordinarily hear, because people will say, Terry, you got to listen to this. This is a great thing. For instance, recently I was introduced to this, maybe a couple of years ago, to the music of this National State Choir of Bulgaria, the Women's Choir. I loved that record. It was The Mystery of the Bulgarian Voice. And oddly enough, 2 years later, Nunsuch calls me up and says they'd like me to write something for this choir with the Kronos Quartet. So some of these connections have been like prophetic.
Well, thank you very much, Terry Riley, for talking
with
us.
Thank you. It's been enjoyable.
Here's Terry Riley performing his composition Across the Lake of the Ancient Word from his album Shri Camel. Thank you. This is Fresh Air. All Things Considered is coming up. Let's check in with co-host Robert Siegel and see what they've got for us. Hi, Robert.
Hello, Marnie.
What are you working on today?
Well, today we have news from the presidential campaigns. Governor Dukakis still in New York. We also have a report of a federal indictment of Ferdinand Marcos, the former Filipino dictator, also his wife Imelda, and Adnan Khashoggi, the Saudi billionaire. We also have a report of a mystery phone caller in Los Angeles who had a number of people going for quite a while. He would call them up repeatedly, pretending to be various movie stars. Margie Rocklin has that story. And also a report about Jordan's King Hussein, who suddenly seems to have become publicly active in the Israeli election campaign.
Thanks, Robert. Those stories and more coming up later on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. There's a new home video on the market aimed at teenage girls that has sold over 22,000 copies since its release less than a month ago. Granted, critic Ken Ducker is not in the target audience, but he has some thoughts about this new video phenomenon.
I think of myself as a pretty with-it guy. I think I have some idea what's cool with the kids these days. I know what's hip, what's deaf, what's ginormous, but holy cow, I was thrown for a loop by Teen Steam starring Alyssa Milano. Never heard of Alyssa Milano? Neither had I. She's apparently the co-star of Who's the Boss, a sitcom starring Tony Danza. This explains why she's an unknown quantity in my case, at least, since I have taken a solemn oath never to see anything with Tony Danza in it. But Teen Steam is being touted as the next big thing in exercise videos, the adolescent equivalent of the Jane Fonda tapes, with big advance orders and a major publicity campaign. The tape is structured as a kind of video diary. Alyssa sits in her bedroom and talks directly to the audience about what a rough day she's having. Then she invites some female pals over to have a combination therapy and workout session.
So, man.
I know what you mean.
Yeah?
Well, I'm grounded just for bringing home 1D. Gosh, if it's always Criminal of the Month or something.
Well, the way I like to work out the stress is to work out and to dance. With a little help of my friends, you and I are going to do both. Not all at once, though. First, we're going to start with the warm-up. Warm-ups are probably the most important part of any workout because it gets your body prepared for all the good stuff. It increases your flexibility, it improves your posture, and it gets your body all lined up the right way. So, let's begin with some deep breaths. Okay, we're gonna bring it
Now, I have nothing against exercise, but here it's used as a metaphor for dealing with your problems. Sit-ups and knee bends become a substitute for thought, for cerebral exercise. On the basis of this tape, it's impossible to understand why Alyssa Milano has become a TV star other than her exemplary ordinariness. She is, I suppose, an idealized version of a young person. Nonetheless, there's a little folder tucked inside the video cover that offers Teen Steam t-shirts, an Alyssa poster, and an Alyssa record. The video itself climaxes with the star wiggling through a rock video that's a well-executed ripoff of all of Janet Jackson's videos. Teen Steam is one of those items whose value varies depending on who's looking at it. For teenagers roughly the same age as Alyssa Milano, who is 15, I suppose it can be taken more or less straightforwardly, a video version of Sassy or 17 magazine. Adults caught staring at Teen Steam, however, can't help feeling faintly unclean. Other new video cassette releases include With Nail and I, an impressively eccentric movie about two unemployed young actors busy being poor and miserable in 60s London. One of them has an uncle who invites the boys out to the country for the weekend, and they think it'll be a lark. The movie is basically just a variation on the City Boys in the Country comedy, but it's got a sour, oddball edge that's all its own. Rent it when you're in the mood for something different, and you'll probably chuckle a lot. There's also Rambo 3, in which Sylvester Stallone applies his muscles and his monosyllables to a tribute to the Afghanistan rebels. The only person in the movie doing any real acting is Richard Crenna, and as such, he's totally irrelevant to Stallone's crude rabble-rousing. Watch it while bearing in mind that compared to the other Rambo movies, this tripe was a box office disappointment.
Ken Ducker writes about popular culture for the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Thank you.
Here's a look at the next fresh air. On our next show, we'll hear from food writers Michael and Jane Stern. Since 1975, the Sterns have driven a million miles searching for authentic regional food. In books like Road Food, Square Meals, and Real American Food, they've documented the cuisine and style of the disappearing roadside cafes. Also, television critic David Bianculli surveys five new shows and a miniseries that debut over the coming week. And New Orleans pianist Harry Connick Jr. returns in our weekly performance spot. So we hope you can join us. We thank everyone who makes Fresh Air possible.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced.
Our senior producer is Danny Miller. Our producers are Phyllis Myers, Amy Sallet, and Naomi Person. Production assistance from Ed Doherty, Becky Thorne, and Lisa Bruton. Chris Burton directed today's show. Our engineer is Audrey Fablitis. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Thanks for listening. This is NPR, National Public Radio.